From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good evening. Welcome to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at FRC, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Well, tens of thousands of pro-life Americans have participated in today's annual March for Life and related festivities as we stand on the eve of the 46th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and perhaps the abortion issue is more contentious now than ever. We are in a game of political partisanship and chessmanship on Capitol Hill, particularly in the House, as Speaker Pelosi has made clear her radical ideals on abortion and the agenda for the newly seated Congress. In our first segment, I'm going to feature audio from an interview with Tony Perkins and Secretary of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, about how the Trump administration is not just affirming the right to freedom of conscience, but actually enforcing it. In my second segment, I'll talk with Republican Congressman Roger Marshall of Kansas, who is a physician and has delivered 10,000 babies, which gives him a lot to say in the pro-life issue, and also wants to discuss how they are planning on countering Pelosi in the House as it comes to the abortion issue. At 32 past, I'll talk with Ryan Bomberger, founder with his wife, Bethany, of the Radiance Foundation, which helps minority women in crisis pregnancy centers and also likes to turn around the social justice narrative and what liberals are doing to annex minority communities out of the pro-life debate. Finally, I will wrap up today's big pro-life show with a soundbite from Vice President Mike Pence, who made a surprise appearance to the delight of all of the audience at the March for Life. And we'll close out with audio from a panel discussion I led earlier today at our annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit with actress Ashley Bratcher and the co-producers of a compelling new pro-life film entitled Unplanned. It will hit the silver screen in March and tells the true story of Abby Johnson, who worked at a Planned Parenthood abortion mill in Texas and oversaw the murder of 22,000 baby boys and girls until one day she saw something in her clinic that changed everything. But first, Republican Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma introduced Senate Bill 109 this week, the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion and Abortion Insurance Full Disclosure Act, and had this to say about the viability issue.
January the 22nd, 1973, the Supreme Court ruled on a ruling that is now the infamous Roe v. Wade decision. It was supposed to have settled the issue about life. It was supposed to settle the issue that every single state has to allow abortion, and that life, according to the Supreme Court in 1973, was about viability. When can this child live on their own outside the womb? Viability. Well, viability in 1973 is very different than viability now, thankfully. When we think about viability now, there are children born at 21, 22 weeks, extremely early, that would have never survived in 1973, that regularly survive now because of great medical care. Viability really doesn't determine life, though. Life is something that begins much earlier. And for some reason in our culture, we're still having a conversation about what to do with that tissue. We as Americans spend a lot of time trying to be able to work on very difficult issues, but for some reason this has become a partisan issue that's exceptionally divisive in our culture. This life and this child shouldn't be a partisan issue. It shouldn't be a Republican child or a Democrat child. This should just be a child. And we should be able to pause for a moment and be able to determine, what are we going to do about her, and is she valuable?
Senator Lankford noted that Congress seems rather double-minded, passing laws to protect preborn bald eagles on one hand, but refusing to protect preborn humans on the other. He said this.
It's something that we acknowledge in the animal world, because this Congress has passed laws to deal with endangered species, including a $100,000 fine if you damage a golden eagle egg, a bald eagle egg, if you go to marine turtles to their nesting spot and destroy or even disturb the nest of a marine turtle. Or in Oklahoma, what we deal with barn swallows that will build their nest in the springtime in a construction area. All construction has to stop if a barn swallow builds a nest in your construction area, because those eggs are important. But because there's common understanding in this Congress that those eagle eggs, turtle eggs, barn swallow eggs is a future barn swallow, turtle, and eagle. We acknowledge that's a life that's in process, and so we protect it.
Toward the end of his speech on the floor of the United States Senate, Lankford spoke in front of a picture of a newly delivered baby girl and said this.
And I pray there is a day that we're not proud, that we looked away from little girls and little boys and said, you're not human enough yet. Your life can be ended because I don't want to look at you. The beginning for us really is to stop and look at what's obvious. That's a child. What are you going to do about that child?
Here now is Tony Perkins talking to Secretary Alex Azar of the Department of Health and Human Services this morning at ProLifeCon.com, our annual event.
Mr. Secretary, welcome to the Family Research Council and the ProLifeCon.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be here.
It's a big day. We've got folks all across America that have come to Washington for the march. And, of course, we've got folks now all across America joining us through via technology and the web. And, you know, 46 years ago this coming Tuesday, the Supreme Court handed down the infamous Roe v. Wade decision. This march taking place every year, not only recognizing and commemorating that anniversary, but also a reminder of the renewal each and every year of our march toward seeing America becoming a pro-life nation again. And sometimes people think we're just marking time, but we've actually made a lot of progress in those 46 years, and a lot of it has come in the last 2 years.
Yes. So much progress has happened in the last 2 years. That's really because we have in President Trump one of the most pro-life presidents in American history, with courage to actually live up to it. Of course, with Vice President Mike Pence, my friend and mentor, leading the charge also. We just keep tackling these issues and supporting life. Just this week, to have had two big announcements in the last couple of days. Just this morning, we at HHS announced that the state of California is in violation of the Weldon Amendments and the Coates-Snow provisions that prevent discrimination against health care providers who refuse to provide or refer for abortion services. That's the first time in history that's been done, enforcing those provisions. We also, just yesterday, put out a proposed rule that under Obamacare says if you offer health care plans in Obamacare that provide for abortions that are not part of the Hyde Amendment, the more limited set of abortions under the Hyde Amendment, if you have these additional elective abortions, you must offer an Obamacare plan that does not.
There were churches that were being forced to provide for abortion, elective abortion coverage in their health care plans. And many of the pastors I know there were involved in lawsuits. And there were efforts to try to get the Obama administration to enforce the law, which they would not. So this is quite significant.
It's really important, and it shows, I think, what we're trying to do as a pro-life administration, a pro-life, pro-science team that we have at HHS, is we're really trying to protect two of the most important and fundamental freedoms that we have. The first is the freedom for life, and the second is of conscience. And we try to make sure that both of those are respected in everything that we do and in all of our programs. We have in our strategic plan at HHS, for the first time ever, it actually declares support for life from the moment of conception up through natural death. Because we are the Department of Life. We are the department whose mission is about enhancing and protecting the health and well-being of all Americans from conception until natural death through all of our programs. And whether it's in biomedical research or if it's in our social services programs, it's always standing up for the sanctity of human life and trying to enhance the quality of that life while people are here on this earth. We've also taken important measures to protect life. We have proposed a foundational reform of Title X, which is the contraception services program that we have at HHS. We have proposed a system of rules that would bring integrity to that program, ensuring that there has to be physical and fiscal separation between a Title X grantee and any entity that provides abortion services. So really bringing that fiscal integrity back to ensure that taxpayer money is not being used to directly or indirectly fund abortion. We have opened the doors to more providers in Title X, and we've seen faith-based, community-based organizations come in, and I hope more providers will come in and seek to be Title X providers there. In addition to what we did this week on the Affordable Care Act, we earlier implemented for the first time stringent requirements to implement the Affordable Care Act's requirement that if you have a plan that offers optional abortion services, those services must be billed for separately, physically and separately, must be billed for and accounted for separately, for the first time actually enforcing the law there in our proposed rule. We've, of course, internationally been fighting to ensure that global and international health organizations do not declare abortion to be a fundamental right, which would have incredible consequences globally. So the United States has been a strong advocate to prevent that. And, of course, we've been working and supporting the Secretary of State on the implementation and expansion of the Mexico City policy under this administration. Then, of course, there's what we're doing on conscience.
Right.
To balance and protect people's rights of conscience, because while healthcare is important, access to healthcare is important, one doesn't have to sacrifice conscience and respect for people's conscience to ensure that people have access to healthcare. We put out a conscience regulation saying that while the Affordable Care Act does require access to contraceptive services, that those employers who have a religious or moral objection to the provision of contraceptive services do not have to do so. And, of course, there are some forms of contraception that many would believe are abortifacients. And this gives them the right, as a matter of conscience, to pull out of that. And we're going to keep fighting for that rule in spite of the courts.
As I understand it, not only is that policy in place, but you've reorganized the department to facilitate the enforcement of that provision, which oftentimes we hear words, but the actions are lacking.
So we created for the first time ever an enforcement division within the Office for Civil Rights, a conscience enforcement division. And one of the fruits of that is that action today against the state of California. And we have a proposed regulation that is now over at the Office of Management and Budget to be finalized that would bring in an entire procedural enforcement regime around the 25 different protections of conscience that are in federal statute that have often just lain too dormant.
I think it would be probably an understatement to say that there's a stark contrast between the agency today and what it was 3 years ago or in the last administration when it comes to, number one, the idea of enforcing the law. That's a novel idea. And then secondly, a respect for conscience, which is extremely important to the American people. That's the religious freedom. That's the rights of conscience, not being forced to violate your deeply held beliefs.
The right of conscience is as foundational as the right to life in our perspective. And we at HHS, we're a massive department with $1.3 trillion of programs. We're over one-fourth of the U.S. government, 330 programs. The president, the vice president, and I and my predecessor, I think, have demonstrated very strong leadership here to just try to make sure that we have a culture of supporting and protecting life, health, well-being for all individuals from the moment of conception through natural death.
Well, Mr. Secretary, we are glad that you came today to join us, and I know you're going to be out at the march, and you're going to be marching with the pro-lifers from across the nation that have come here to Washington, D.C., but again, we've got pro-life advocates from literally around the world that have connected with us today on the Pro-Life Con. What is your message to the pro-lifers that long to see America being a nation that once again respects the sanctity of human life?
Tony, I would just say to all of those here in Washington and across the country who are involved in the March for Life, thank you. Thank you for being a voice. Thank you for standing up to protect innocent life. Just know that your support, your help, your words, they matter a great deal. It can be lonely here in Washington if one is pro-life. It's good to know that there are others out there supporting you, praying for you, and being there with you in this effort.
We thank you, Mr. Secretary, for following the lead of this president and supporting him and standing for the right to life in America. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tony.
This is Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins. We'll be back.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships in for Tony Perkins on this very pro-life themed Washington Watch. Well, before the break, Secretary Azar said to Tony Perkins that there was a pro-life, pro-science team in this administration. And someone who is both pro-life and pro-science joins me now. Republican Congressman Roger Marshall from the 1st District of Kansas is going to be on. You can begin to grasp a little bit of his commitment to the issue when you learn that he has delivered over 10,000 babies in his career as a physician and is now in D.C. to make a difference on the life issue. Welcome to Washington Watch, Congressman Marshall.
Sarah, thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited to talk about pro-life and the March for Life today.
So I'm very excited and curious to hear about your perspective firsthand in the March for Life, knowing particularly that there were more than 200,000 pro-lifers. Were you surprised, first of all, by the turnout in today's activities?
No, I guess I wasn't surprised. This will be the third walk I've got to participate in. But I got to tell you, my favorite moment, though, was last night. There were some kids from Kansas that have came up for the walk. I was sharing within the Capitol tour, and I found out that two of the young ladies with them I had delivered about 15 years ago. So what an honor it was to see them on the House floor and then see them again today in the walk. That's what I was excited about.
Well, I do know that you had two groups of Kansans come to travel more than 27 hours by bus to attend the annual March for Life. So to see your constituents in your new hometown, as it were, can you tell us how fired up they were to be from Kansas and in D.C.?
Well, first of all, they were an inspiration to me. I mean, some days do get pretty tough and long up here, so it's just good to know that they've got my back, that they're here to support me, and they were truly fired up. Now, they were a little tired last night when I saw them, but today on the mall, they were really excited, and we had a great time together. When Vice President Pence spoke, I mean, it was just a great moment. When he got there, I think that was a surprise for everybody. There was a band there. I don't remember the band's name, but they were good, and all the kids knew who the band was. So I was excited to share those moments with them.
You've used your past practice and your experience as a physician, very well-credentialed, extensive practice as a physician, to sort of inform your legislative priorities and your stance for life. And I'm curious as to going into this new session, knowing that Pelosi has taken the reins as Speaker of the House and has some very distinct pro-abortion sensitivities and legislative priorities. What is the concept behind how the Congress, particularly the Freedom Caucus, the Pro-Life Caucus, Republicans who support life, what is the plan to fight back against that leadership that is so obviously bent in the other direction?
Yeah, you know, there's something called a Value Actions Team that Vicky Hartzler out of Missouri leads. And she just does an incredible job keeping us on task. I would say, coming up with 10, she probably has 10, 15 pieces of legislation that we'll all be supporting. And what I like to talk about is things like pain capable. And when I share my stories as an obstetrician, when I had that mom in my office at 18 weeks of gestation, and I feel the size of that baby, and I put my doctor on there, and that baby pushes back against my hand, almost reaching out to me, or when that baby hears its sister's voice, I can hear the heart rate increase. So, I'm constantly just telling those stories and talking about that these babies are truly, they're Americans, and we need to be protecting them. So we'll keep organized, and we'll keep at it.
So as we go into this legislative session and understanding that you have staunch allies standing with you, do you find yourself sort of compelled to act further and emboldened by the fact that we have an administration in the White House and a Republican-controlled Senate that is really backing you every step of the way? That has to be an encouragement for somebody serving in the House, even though you're up against such dire opposition, to know that the bulk of the other chamber and the White House is behind you 100%.
You're absolutely. I'm proud to stand beside the president, and I'm very proud the president is standing beside us on this issue. We think about the Supreme Court judges that he's appointed. It gives me hope that legislation we might be able to pass someday, that our Supreme Court would uphold that legislation. So it's great that we have a Senate as a backstop. It motivates me to get up every day. I've been on the House floor, I believe, 3 times in the past 2 weeks about just this issue. So Ms. Pelosi motivates me. Absolutely she does, because I know that if it was up to her, that there would be more abortion on demand. There'd be more government funding of abortion. And so at least right now, there could be no direct payment of government money for abortions. Nevertheless, we could talk about Planned Parenthood and how they manipulate that system for the rest of the show. So Planned Parenthood is enough alone to motivate me to get up and fight for these babies.
Well, we are so encouraged to listen to how you stand firm in the face of opposition. That's something here at FRC that we have made a very big priority of ours. And for me personally, I'm emboldened by listening to someone who, even though they're up against opposition, is motivated to keep on working for legislation that protects the sanctity of human life. And as a physician who understands so intimately the nature of humanity, the understanding of the gestational structure itself, who has delivered babies, who has experienced the science turn miracle firsthand, it really is compelling when you realize that this is not a political battle. It ought not to be a partisan battle. It is not a creature of a contemporary definition, but life is truly scientific reality. It is immutable truth, and it is divinely designed.
You know, absolutely, Sarah. I mean, I just often get asked, when does life begin? And I could talk for the next 20 minutes about how my faith and my actions as a physician would convince me that life begins at conception. And I think actually Scripture talks about that God knows us even before we were born. So I'm excited. Just remind all your listeners, please keep praying for us. We feel it. Go to social media and say you like us. We need a word of encouragement as well. Thanks for all that you do there at Family Research Council.
Thank you so much, Congressman. This is Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry. We'll be up next with Ryan Bomberger, founder of the Radiance Foundation. We'll be right back.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins. Don't forget to follow Tony on Twitter at @tperkins. And you can find out more about today's program at tonyperkins.com. I'm very excited to talk to our next guest. Ryan Baumberger and his wife, Bethany, founded an organization called the Radiance Foundation. It's an educational nonprofit that uses creative campaigns, powerful multimedia presentations, fearless journalism, and compassionate community outreach to illuminate the intrinsic value in every person. He is passionate, as is his wife, about spreading truth with his factivist campaigns and has a lot to say on this day of the March for Life. Welcome so much, Ryan.
It is great to be here with you.
So, Ryan, I want to talk a little bit about the work that you and Bethany have done with your Factivist campaigns. Can you tell me a little bit about the organization and aim of that particular approach?
Well, we are just really passionate about the truth, and we understand that God created us to be emotional beings, but as Christians, we have to be able to fuse the emotional with the evidential. You know, emotions don't set us free. Truth does. And so we're passionate about factivism. In fact, we have a slogan that says, less activism, more factivism. Mm. And so we want to equip and empower people to understand culture-shifting issues by understanding the context and getting the clarity in how to address these issues.
So we have seen some really compelling campaigns and national advertisements that the Radiance Foundation has run. And for those of you listening, go to theradiancefoundation.org. These are very compelling billboards, signs, advertisements. You all do social media and advertising exceptionally well. Very, very compelling. But in particular, I want to talk about the fact that the Radiance Foundation has geared itself toward addressing some of the inconsistencies in the treatment of race and how not all of us understand not only the eugenics of Margaret Sanger, who was Planned Parenthood's founder, but also the fact that disproportionately black babies are aborted at a much higher rate than white babies. So can you explain a little bit about that?
Well, to understand why that statistic is the way it is, where abortion rates are up to 5 times higher, you have to understand the history of racial targeting. You have to understand the nature, the essence of Planned Parenthood, which was spawned in eugenic racism. But you look at New York City, for instance, it's the home of Planned Parenthood. For the past 10 years, there have been more black babies aborted than born alive, the only demographic that has more induced deaths than births. In fact, in 2014, there were 1,101 black lives aborted for every 1,000 born alive. And that's just one example of so many. Planned Parenthood tweeted, you know, back in October that black women were better off. They were statistically safer to end their pregnancy, to abort their pregnancy, than to carry the child to term or give birth. I mean, the targeting has never ended. And so we have a campaigns like whatabortionreallyis.com, our billboard campaign that really calls out abortion for what it is: violence, systemic racism, lost fatherhood, fake feminism. And, you know, the pro-abortion activists didn't like that campaign at all.
Oh, I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure that probably struck them as a little bit hard to swallow. You know, you've also written about, and I encourage you to, listeners, go read Ryan's blog. It is excellent. It is funny. It is whip smart. You've written recently about toxic masculinity and how men rejecting their responsibilities as fathers is really a perpetuation of toxic masculinity itself, right? So in abandoning this life that these fathers have helped to create, that really is sort of the ultimate form of toxic masculinity, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, Gillette wants to lump all men together and bash men. I mean, we get it from every corner. Perhaps they should look at their own company and the way that they exploit women all the time, or perhaps that they fund, you know, the most toxic form of feminism, Planned Parenthood, to the tune of $333,665 in the last reported year. That is the truest form of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. So we just try to call out things the way they are and to give people an understanding. Don't just read a headline. Don't just believe a mainstream media article. There's so much more to that story that they're not willing to tell you. And that's what we try to do through the Radiance Foundation.
Are you surprised at the blowback that you've experienced from organizations like sort of liberal black academics? I've read specifically in your website about Dr. Yancey, for example, but also you delivered a presentation at Wheaton, which I think still has a lot of us in the pro-life community reeling. It was a presentation entitled Black Lives Matter In and Out of the Womb, and you really received some stunningly inaccurate and misguided criticism. And in this last minute or so that we have left, can you explain to me a little bit about why that was and how we counter it?
Well, as someone who is brown, I'm an African-American, if you want to use that term. They couldn't accept the fact that I don't embrace the Black Lives Matter movement because it's pro-abortion, because it's anti-fatherhood, and there's so many anti-biblical elements to it. My charge to students at Wheaton was, why do we embrace a secular movement when the church should lead on issues of racial justice? And so the response from staff to Wheaton officials and three student government leaders was to say that I made students, staff, and faculty of color feel unheard, underrepresented, and unsafe on their campus.
Oh, wow.
If make students feel unsafe, and then we have a real problem with Christian education today.
Ryan, we're going to have to wrap it there. Again, Radiance Foundation, theradiancefoundation.org. Thank you so much for joining me. We have to have you back. There's so much more I want to ask you. This is Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry in for Tony Perkins. A reminder that you can find information about today's broadcast and listen to the podcast on TonyPerkins.com. Earlier this morning, Mike Pence and his wife Karen made a surprise appearance at the March for Life as 200,000 Americans took a stand for the sanctity of human life. And the crowd was extremely energized. Let's listen to a soundbite from his presentation.
We're the Pences and we're pro-life. And we're proud to welcome you back to our nation's capital. Grateful that you made the long journey here to the largest pro-life gathering in the United States of America, the 46th annual March for Life. We gather here because we stand for life. We gather here because we stand for compassion. And we gather here because we believe, as our founders did, that we are, all of us, born and unborn, endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and first among these rights is the right to life. 46 years ago this month, the majority on the Supreme Court turned its back on that right. But in that moment, a movement was born, a movement defined by compassion and love, a movement animated by faith and truth, and a movement that's been winning hearts and minds every day since. Because of all of you gathered here, all those you represent, and all those who have gone before, we know in our heart of hearts that life is winning in America once again. Know that he who said, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you," also said, "I will never leave you or forsake you," as you stand for his creation, as you stand for the right to life. And as you stand, we're here to tell you that you can be confident you do not stand alone. Our president reinstituted the Mexico City policy, so now no American foreign aid flows to organizations that support or promote abortion.
Well, before today's march, at ProLifeCon.com, our digital action summit for the pro-life community, held in conjunction with the March for Life, I hosted a panel discussion about a movie that's slated for release in March entitled Unplanned, with actress Ashley Bratcher and co-producers Carrie Solomon and Chuck Konzelman. Let's listen in. Today we get to go to Hollywood. So this is my favorite part of this part of the morning. We have two gentlemen with us who are the writers, co-producers, and directors of a film called Unplanned. It is the story of Abby Johnson's journey of transformation. And if you know about this story, Abby Johnson was the youngest Planned Parenthood clinic director in America and was personally involved in upwards of 20,000 abortions. She was involved in this abortion process, but came to see something in her clinic one day that changed everything and ultimately became one of the most ardent pro-life proponents in the entire country. Ashley Bratcher joins us. She plays the lead role of Abby in the new film and has also starred in the movies War Room and 90 Minutes in Heaven. So please welcome Carrie, Chuck, and Ashley. So, gentlemen, let me start with you as the driving force behind this. We know this was a book first. So at what point did you decide that this was right for cinematic treatment and would make a good movie?
Pretty quickly. We had a young lady walk up to us, and she gave us the book. We were at the coffee shop just talking about, you know, projects and stuff. And I was kind of shocked at first because it was a story on abortion. We were looking to do a Western or something like that, you know, something manly, you know, that kind of thing.
It would be about angry men with powerful hands.
Right, you know. But we kept the book because the lady we knew, so we trusted her opinion. Chuck had read it first. And he gave me that look, which was, you need to read this. And I'm like, uh-oh, because that look leads to doing stuff you may not necessarily want to do. And I was thinking to myself, okay, this can't happen. I mean, why would the Lord give me an abortion movie? What do I know about abortion, you know? And I read it, and I was like, oh, man, this has got to happen.
Wow.
And so we suddenly knew.
So were you surprised in getting involved in this movie that the process had to take place so quickly because you were probably going to be up against a little bit of resistance? Have you experienced that in the making of this movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We knew that we had to do this completely outside the normal Hollywood system. This had to be a completely independent effort from top to bottom. Mm. Studios, it should surprise no one, are very agendaized. And we knew we couldn't go there for financing. We knew we couldn't go there for distribution. We knew we had to steer clear of the standard agency system for casting. I mean, we just had to be completely apart from that system.
And we did it in secret. So we shot it in Oklahoma undercover. And
wow.
Under an assumed name, yeah.
We were in a warehouse. We built a 4,000-square-foot set. People of Oklahoma are absolutely amazing. Film Commission was great. And we prayed on it, and the Lord said, I'm sending you to Oklahoma. So the people of Oklahoma should be happy.
Oh, wow. Well, Ashley, that brings me to your story a little bit. I have heard in interviews that this was a very quick turnaround in terms of casting for you. So what was going through your mind when you got a phone call?
So I got the phone call on a Wednesday morning that said, hey, you got the role. Yes. By the way, can you get on a plane in 5 hours and be in Oklahoma for 7 to 8 weeks? Yeah, these guys like to do that to me. So I said, okay, well, I guess nothing's impossible. So I called up my husband and I said, hey, honey, I got the part. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm leaving in 5 hours before you get home from work. And he's like, what? So we made arrangements for our son and packed up my bags. My husband was super supportive. We had talked about the movie beforehand. I felt very, very connected to the role, and I'd been praying for it for a long time. And to hear it finally happen was incredible.
Now, were you familiar with Abby Johnson's story before taking the role?
No.
So this was really sort of going in blind,
oh,
wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, so I had auditioned several weeks prior. And like I said, I didn't know anything about Abby. And in the script that I had for the audition, I only saw the pro-choice side. I only saw parts where she was working in Planned Parenthood. And I was like, this is interesting. Is she going to become pro-life? And I was like, I'm going to have to look this lady up. She seems really interesting. So after the audition, I looked her up online, and I saw some of her testimony, and I was floored. Mm. I mean, I was personally convicted. I could not believe that my eyes had not been opened prior to this. And from that moment on, I was all over it. I knew I had prayed, and I thought in my spirit that I was meant to play this role, and I just prayed for weeks and weeks and weeks that it would happen.
So all of you have been involved in the film industry, and this was not your first go-round. How was the making of this movie, and the entirety of the story different from the other films that you've been involved in? And I know War Room, 90 Minutes in Heaven, God's Not Dead, you have experience promoting the types of stories that the people who are going to be watching this program would love to see. How is this story's process different?
You know, you're talking about the most divisive issue in the, possibly in history. Mm. I mean, we're talking about the murder of children around the world. And so, and it's there is no middle here. There's the right, there's the left, there's pro-life, and there's pro-choice, obviously. And so we knew that this was going to be volatile, that everything you did would be amplified. And so we had to take that into account. We prayed a tremendous amount. We prepared ourselves, but we walked in faith here. We really honestly prayed on this. And then what happened was we were guided. We had miracle after miracle. Doors opened. You know, we needed money. And we had 20 minutes left before we were out of money. And a guy from an airplane flying over set from his jet calls us up and says, "I'm sending you $1 million.
Wow.
I was praying.
Wow.
And he said, "I was praying, and Jesus told me to send you $1 million.
Yeah.
And that's the exact number we needed with 20 minutes left.
I prayed four times, and Jesus said yes four times. Okay, that's enough. I can do
so
this.
Give me your bank account number. And I thought at first that was a little unusual until he said he was going to send me $1 million. I said, 1, 3, 7, 8, 4, 5. And that guy, by the way, was Mike Lindell, the Pillow Man on TV.
Oh, my goodness. How fabulous.
It was like there was a hurricane, but we were in the eye of the hurricane.
Yes.
And we had a half dozen people on a permanent onset ministry prayer team, so they were praying day and night, and they would literally wander the set. We would have a voluntary prayer service before 15 minutes before production started, and then they would just wander the set looking for whoever had problems, needed prayers, wanted to pray for something in their life, needed prayers for someone that they knew. And this would happen over a standard day on set's about 12 or 14 hours. Wow. And they would just do that for 12 or 14 hours straight.
So you went to make a movie and church would break out.
That's the funny thing. We had Catholics, evangelicals, mm-hmm. we had priests, pastors all over the country, rabbis. I mean, it was an amazing thing. The one thing that everybody from every denomination understood, we even had atheists praying. I don't know how that works. But is that this is an issue that crosses those lines. Mm-hmm. It's about the children.
Yeah. Ashley, let me ask you a couple of questions. I know you're a mom. Was it particularly emotional telling Abby's story, realizing you yourself are a mother and having gone through that process yourself? Did you find yourself putting yourself in Abby's shoes, thinking what it would have been like on the other side of that perspective in the clinic?
Of course. Thinking of my son and the idea that I could have easily made that choice. I was very young when I had him. And trying to imagine what my life would have been like without him broke my heart. So there were definitely instances in filming where I thought, this is completely breaking my heart. Mm. And to know that Abby had her daughter during the time that she was still working at Planned Parenthood, right. And I think that maybe that was when God started to soften her heart just a little bit and slowly, slowly open her eyes to reveal what was really happening.
So tell me about the conversation you had with your mom during the making of this movie. I know that you had a very emotional conversation with her. Can you tell us about it?
So like I mentioned, I didn't have a lot of time to prepare to leave, and so the only people who knew I had gone were my husband, my son, my sister. By the time that my mother called me on the fourth day in Oklahoma, I thought, okay, maybe I should answer and tell her where I am, even though I'm really busy. I'm like, I gotta talk to my mom and let her know where I am.
Because a mom is always a mom, right?
A mom is always a mom. She will never stop calling you no matter how old you are, and I'll do the same, I know. So I was in a salon getting my hair done because I had to be a redhead, thanks to these guys. And I answered the phone to tell my mother where I was, and I was very cautious when I started to explain Abby's story because my mother had shared with me that when she was in high school, she'd had an abortion prior to me. Mm. She also shared with me that when she got pregnant when she was 19 with me, that she knew she could never have another abortion. That was it. That was the only conversation that we had ever had. And so in talking to her about the project, I did not want her to feel judged. I didn't want her to think that I thought anything less of her. And I just wanted her to know that I loved her, but I wanted her to know the truth of what I was doing. And as I explained the story, she just completely broke down. And I knew that it was more than just what she had explained to me before. And she said, "Ashley, I need to tell you something that I've never told you before. And here I am in a salon with aluminum foil sticking out of my hair." And I'm like, "Okay, Mom, what is it?" And she says, "You never knew this, but I was at the clinic. They called my name. I was on the table. A pregnant nurse came in and examined me. And I got very sick. And I knew I couldn't do it. And I intended to abort you. And I got up and I walked out." And it just blows my mind that 4 days after I've accepted this role and stepped in to play Abby Johnson, I never knew that. I never, ever knew that my story almost never happened. And it was just an incredible testament to me of how much God cares for us, and that he does have a plan from conception to this moment in time to bring me here to help tell this story.
So it's amazing to me how that decision to keep you has changed the trajectory of your life and your life, and in a small way, the lives of everyone in this room as well. Oh, we pray for incredible success for Unplanned, which releases in March
29th.
So very quickly, we only have about a minute and a half left. What are you hoping this movie accomplishes?
I think that, of course, we all hope for the end of the Holocaust that is abortion, but I think it's more, you know, since 1980, 1.5 billion children have been murdered around the world. That means there's probably conservatively a billion post-abortive women around the world. Right. And so hope, forgiveness, mercy, grace. There is a way for you to leave your luggage at the train station, get on the train, and be free of that. You know, that's what we're taught. This is about love. This is not about anger or condemnation. It's an incredible story. God can cook. 10 seconds from being aborted, 30 years later, about to become the pro-life face of the pro-life world. We ask people to realize that this is an amazing story. And if you look at it, if you analyze it, we hope that people get from this freedom to understand the truth.
Oh, thank you so much for being with us today. We so appreciate it. Let's thank Chuck and Carrie and Ashley. UnplannedMovie.com. It releases in March. We encourage everybody to see it. Well, as we wrap up this edition, this special Friday pro-life edition of Washington Watch, I'm encouraged by some of the recent studies that have come out. Students for Life has just told us in January that 7 out of 10 millennials, that 18 to 34 crowd, approves of some kind of abortion limit, and only 7% of those same ones support the DNC platform on abortion, which is, in short, no restrictions whatsoever, while 42% support broad restrictions. So as we wrap up this edition, I am reminded of a particular verse in 2 Kings. Elisha was up against some pretty stunning odds himself, and in 2 Kings 6:16, he admonished, "Do not be afraid, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them." We encourage you to stand strong. Follow the dialogue on Facebook and Twitter at T. Perkins. You can also find me on Twitter at Sarah P. Perry. And for more information, go to TonyPerkins.com. This has been Washington Watch. We will talk to you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.